Well, Colin and Stephen, your wish is my command. This is The 12 Maidens.
The 12 Maidens.
Abak, Aldol, Ayat, Hudak, Guthak, Guthor, Gome, Testator, Derisor, Destator. Come hither, all ye who love the times and places, wherein all kinds of mockeries and deceits are practiced. And ye who make things disappear and who render them invisible, come hither to deceive all those who regard these things, so that they may be deceived, and that they may seem to see that which they see not, and hear that which they hear not, so that their senses may be deceived, and that they may behold that which is not true. Come ye then hither and remain, and consecrate this enchantment, seeing that our Lord, the mighty Prince of Darkness, hath destined ye for such, so mote it be.
So mote it be. So mote it be. So mote it be. So mote it be.
The 12 Maidens, a serial for radio by Stuart Ferrer. Part 1, The Black Ark.
Ice with it?
No, thanks, Joe. But you don't get my point.
You're 17 and a half. Course I do, Bill. Just that I think you're making mountains out of ruddy molehills. That Beaulieu Terrace lot, they drink in here.
Well, not all that much.
Granted, but they've got their own mess, being half army. Still, I reckon I see as much of them as most of us around here, and I found them a decent lot. You'll not convince me they're experimenting with germ warfare or death rays, 1820.
I didn't say that.
No, but you've been damn well intin' it all over the village.
All I say is we're entitled to know what's going on our doorstep. And what do they want an elephant for?
Oh, that, I don't know. Why don't you ask them if they've got a license for it?
It's no laughing matter, Joe. Well, there's quite a few animals, one kind or another, that's gone to Beaulieu Terrace this year. You seen any of them come out again, poor beasts?
Oh, so it's vivisection too, is it?
Well, there's some around here who's asking. And whatever it is, we ought to be told. A lot of queer equipment, their own generating plant, aerials going round and round.
Haven't you ever heard of radar?
Funny radar that needs a private zoo. And if none of that worries you, Joe, just answer me one thing. What killed Dr. McKinnon, eh? One day he was in this very bar, fit as a flea. And next day they told us he died in his sleep. Even the inquest couldn't say why. Couldn't, Joe? Or wasn't allowed to?
Just a shade more, George.
Coming up.
Right, lock it at that. How about you, Margaret?
It's a cleaner wave form, but not quite stable yet.
Wait a minute. How's that?
Lovely. Should we try a scan?
Okay.
Morning, everybody.
Morning. Oh, good morning, Philip.
May I introduce Mr. Rex Andrews, who's joining us here. Mr. Peter Brent, my chief scientific assistant.
How do you do?
Mr. Brent?
Miss Margaret Govan, our biologist.
Hello.
Miss Govan.
And Sergeant George Blake, REME.
Sergeant.
How do you do, sir?
These three are the ones who do the real work on Biodar, you know, Andrews. While I'm bogged down with paper, they're producing the answers.
Well, some of them.
You're doing pretty well, Peter, considering how much of it was still in Tom McKinnon's head when he died. Don't mind us, just carry on while we watch.
We're trying a sweep at maximum range with the new individual target tubes.
What is Biodar's maximum range now, Professor?
About 1,500 meters.
At the moment, but George reckons we could double or treble it with a modification to one of the delay circuits.
I reckon it might work, sir. The way we've got it now, there's a limit to the usable time base, but I may have found a way around it. Look, I've sketched it out. If we could just... You feeling all right, Professor?
I can catch him, quick!
I've got him. George, give us a hand.
Right, on the floor. Margaret, that coat, make a pillow.
Oh, here.
Hello? Hello? Get the MO quick over to Hut 4. Professor Jessup's passed out. We'll find him.
Is he often taken like that?
He's had a few bouts of migraine lately, but that's the worst yet. Just knocked him down. Funny, I've known him quite a few years. He was as fit as a horse till Tom McKinnon died and he took over.
Then it started?
Yes, whatever it is.
Well, the MO says he'll be all right. He's not to do any work for today, at least.
But don't these attacks hold up your program? I mean, doesn't the professor have to authorize what you do? This proposed modification, for instance.
I don't want to sound rude, but may we ask who you are? All we know is your name. And what we're up to is really classified information.
I'm glad to hear you say that, because I'm the new security officer for the Biodar project.
Oh, no. I'm sorry, it was nothing personal, but, I mean, barbed wire's bad enough. Do we need a full-time jailer as well?
Two, to be exact.
No. What?
But hardly jailers, Miss Govan. We'll be here for your protection as well as the project's.
I wasn't conscious of needing it.
Two, you say?
I'm afraid so. My colleague Susan Platt arrives this afternoon.
A woman jailer? To search Margaret for microfilm every time she goes on leave, I suppose.
Not funny.
Mr. Brent, just think what you have here. Biodar. The first radar in the world, as far as we know, that can pick up sentient life and locate it exactly. It can pinpoint a man in thick woodland with an accuracy of just under 2 meters in range and about 8 seconds of arc in bearing and elevation, while it practically ignores the trees. It can lock onto a hare running across a field and follow it by automatic tracking. The smallest individual target you've picked up so far was a mallard duckling that got separated from the brood on Bewley Tower's fish pond. Generally, a small life appears as a background mush of various levels. You've made progress in positive identification of genera, if not of species.
Oh, thank you.
And where the larger mammals and man are concerned, Miss Govan, at least, believes male and female can be distinguished with increasing accuracy. You can also...
You're well informed, aren't you?
Well, on paper, and about a week out of date, I gather. I'd like you to fill out my paper knowledge.
May I see your warrant card, or whatever it is you carry?
Good, you're getting the idea. Here.
Oh, thank you. I can't say I like it, but I suppose you've a job to do.
Thank you.
I'll tell you one thing, Mr. Andrews. You'd have got very little joy out of Tom McKinnon when he was alive.
Oh?
Biodar was his invention. He wanted the whole world to share it. The only reason he let the army in was because he hadn't the resources to develop it without them.
Dr. McKinnon is unfortunately dead, and we must deal with the situation as it is. And I, as Mr. Brent recognizes, have a job to do.
Right. Well... This, as you can see, is the Biodar control and display unit. The display is mainly on these four tubes. Mm-hmm. A tube, the big one, is the planned position indicator, which gives you a Biodar map of the surrounding area. A map of the animal and human life, that is, not of geographical features. That, for instance, on about bearing 140 to 145, it's Glebe Farm. The very bright spot's the stables, half a dozen horses. And that more scattered cluster...
Cattle?
Yes, prize Herefords. They're very proud of them. Pigsty, hen houses. Nothing from the farmhouse itself at the moment. You get quite a blip from it at night when all the family's in. Over here, look, that's the edge of the moor. See the deer? Close together. They're moving.
Quite fast. Something must have scared them.
Noisy lorry on the main road, probably.
Or Reuben Fairfax after Rabbit. That 12 bore of his sounds like a cannon.
Anyway, A tube's aerial keeps sweeping all the time, regardless, 15 revs a minute. The other aerial you can direct at individual targets. And the answer comes up on B, C and D.
We use the word target in a purely observational sense, Mr. Andrews.
Of course.
Look, we will pick out one for you. The Glebe Farm stables, bearing 143, range 881.
On range.
Angle, zero.
On bearing. Now, you see, Margaret's got range on her tube. I've got bearing, both from A tube, the PPI. Then George searches in angle of sight till the brake comes up on all of our tubes. There. Mm.
Angle, minus 0.36.
And that wavy line on your tube?
Oh, it's five or six horses, very close together.
Good Lord. How do you know it's horses?
Aha, by the shape of the wavy line, the brake. Oh, you'll learn to recognise them. And those are pigs. You see the difference in the shape of the brake?
It starts sharper, but dies away quicker.
He learns fast. We're building up a recognition book of species. Margaret's the expert on that, of course. Our little zoo's under her wing.
The difficulty comes when you get different species too close for the Biodar to separate. Mm. Well, for example, a man on a horse with a dog at their heels.
Don't let her fool you, Mr. Andrews. Margaret has sorted out a brake like that in 5 seconds and tell you the dog was a bitch.
Well, Andrews may have a job to do, darling, but I just don't like the man.
He's probably watching us now through government-issue collapsible binoculars. Mm.
Better stop that, then.
Mm.
You're an irresponsible nit.
So?
Seriously, though, Tom McKinnon must be turning in his grave. I know the village is full of talk about death rays and things, but clamping down even harder, that's no answer.
All right, what is the answer? Give Biodar to everybody? Make our findings public?
Well, why not? I mean, think of its use in rescue work, for a start.
I couldn't agree more. But Tom was a realist. No army, no money. He knew that. And no money, no Biodar. Get it developed and then find a way around the secrecy thing. Tom would have found a way.
Oh, I know he thought so. That's why he wasn't a realist. He was a ruddy optimist.
Linda! Margaret!
Hi, Carl!
Hey, what's eating you, Carl?
Have you met this monstrous creature, Andrews?
Join the club. We hate him, too.
Oh, I shouldn't have thought he'd interfere with you much, though, Carl. Equipment, he can understand, but your line of research will be too abstruse for him, surely.
Well, obviously, he hasn't told you.
Told us?
He strode into my office this afternoon. Dr. Carl Ewing, I believe. Flashing documents and wearing his self-importance like a cassock. I understand you are investigating the connection, if any, between the Biodar principle and the known phenomena of extrasensory perception. Well, he made it sound like some kind of perversion.
He would, yes.
Well, anyway, I admitted to it, and being tolerant and forgiving by nature, I started trying to explain it in terms comprehensible to the childish imagination of a security officer. Well, don't bother. The man says, your work is not my personal province. I shall be leaving that to my assistant, who is an expert in your field.
What? Well, this woman is coming?
Yes, Susan Platt. I ask you, Susan Platt.
I'm sorry, Carl, the name rings no bells. Who is she?
A renegade. A deserter. Betrayed her calling for a mess of pottage.
Yes, I suppose Carl Ewing would call me a renegade. But then he is a little, well, earnest, wouldn't you say?
Oh, I don't know. We're very fond of Carl. Another sherry?
Yeah, this is fine, thanks. So am I fond of him, even if he is angry with me right now.
How much did you work with him on this psychical research thing?
Not exactly with him, though we were in contact a lot. Mm-hmm. He was mostly doing research on telepathy and clairvoyance while I was out chasing poltergeists.
Catch any?
In both senses. I showed up some fakes, mostly unconscious ones. And I found some that seemed unquestionably genuine.
I notice that even you say seem.
Oh, I keep an open mind. Try to avoid any preconceptions, like a good detective.
Is that what attracted you to security work?
I suppose so. The job came along and I took it. And in Carl's eyes, that was selling out. I should still be chasing poltergeists.
I'm whacked. I'm just dying for that drink.
Oh, Maggie, come and meet the woman jailer. Margaret Govan, our biologist, Susan Platt.
Hello.
Hello. I hope you don't look on me as that.
Oh, it's nothing personal. Just think all this hush-hush is the wrong way to go about it, that's all.
Could be. Unfortunately, I don't decide policy. I just do what I'm told.
Don't we all? Oh, you needn't worry. I keep the rules.
I'm sure you do. Mr. Brent.
Oh, Peter. We're all first names here.
Peter.
Yes, Susan.
I think Margaret said she could do with a drink.
Oh, sorry, Maggie, love. Usual?
Yes, please. Right. Carl tells us you're an expert on ESP as well as security.
To a certain extent, yes, if you include other paranormal phenomena under ESP. Well, Carl thinks I should have stuck to it.
Dear Carl, he does have a way of being right about things.
Oh, heir of air, join together our minds as one creature that this work may be done.
So mote it be.
Oh, fire of fire, set our wills ablaze that this work may be done.
So mote it be.
Oh, water of water, blend the passion of our hearts that this work may be done.
So mote it be.
Oh, earth of earth, make strong our purpose and give shape to our intent that this work may be done.
So mote it be. So mote it be. So mote it be.
Bring forward the sacrifice!
In she goes. Careful.
Got it.
Hang on while I earth the chassis.
Aren't you being a bit optimistic, trying for 6,000 metres right away?
Oh, we might as well. Either the mod works or it doesn't. If it does, 2,000 or 6,000, it's all the same. Beyond about 7,000, we'd get distortion of the time base, but it's virtually linear up to there. Okay, that's secure.
Hang on to your hats, boys and girls. A-tube first.
George, you're a genius, an electronic wizard.
Make him a sergeant major, somebody.
Not bad, is it?
Not bad. The prof will be tickled pink. Look at it, clear and detailed, right out to 6,000.
The village, it's like a cluster of jewels.
Oh, so it should be. 700 people is quite a lot of sentient life, wouldn't you say?
Oh, call it 500. Some will be out this time of day.
And there's a... Yes, it must be, the bus to Cramouth. Oh. Pulling out along the main road. Yeah. It's always packed on Wednesdays. God, it'll make a difference, having the village in range.
And all those farms along the valley, marvellous.
Hey, that's odd.
What is?
Over here, on about 250, range 3,000 outwards.
There's nothing there. The tube's dark.
Yes, and it shouldn't be.
Here, give me the 2.5-inch map. 250, 3,000, that'll be, Maiden Tor.
Oh, well, there you are. That explains it. Maiden Tor's a good 500 feet higher than us, so everything behind it's dead ground, screened from our areas.
No, no, there's more than that. Maiden Tor itself's blacked out.
I don't believe you. It can't be.
He's right, you know. The top of Maiden Tor's about... Just a minute. 3,160 metres from here, and the black area starts...
Let's check exactly on the target system.
Right. Bearing 252, it'll be. On.
Range 3160. On. Good Lord.
Angle, plus 3 degrees, and searching. That should be it, about.
But there's nothing. Those moors are full of small life. There ought to be at least background mush.
Maggie, reduce range slowly while George goes on searching in angle.
Right. 3140, 3120, 3100, still nothing. 2980, 2960. It doesn't make sense.
Now, keep going.
2900. Oh, wait a minute. Yes, the marsh is beginning now, just about 2860.
Here too.
And on C-tube. Well, that settles it. We can double-check, but for some reason, everything goes dead about 300 metres short of the summit. On a facing slope you can see from the window here. As Margaret says, it doesn't make sense.
And look, on A-tube again. The blacked-out bit's about 600 metres wide. It's as though someone has drawn a perfect circle with its centre on the summit of Maiden Tor and screened us out. It can't be done. Or can it?
I reckon we should get Professor Jessop. There's something funny here.
He's still in bed. The MO says not to worry him for another day.
Right, then. Let's spend it gathering more facts. Maggie, you and I could take the Land Rover up to Maiden Tor with a walkie-talkie, Geiger counter, compass, whatever. Mm. George, will you stay here with another walkie-talkie and keep in touch with us while you scan us?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Well, this is as far as we'll get, eh? Have to walk the rest.
Looks about a quarter of a mile to the top. Is George still getting us?
Easy to Fox. Can you hear me? Over.
Fox to Easy. Loud and clear. Over.
Easy to Fox. Have you still got us on the tubes, and what's our range, if so? Over.
Fox to Easy, yes. A clear double break at 2745 meters. I say again, 2745, and on the same bearing as the summit. Over.
Easy to Fox. Right, we're going to start climbing. The moment our brakes disappear, if they do, call us, okay? Over.
Fox to Easy, we'll call. Maybe whatever it is blacks out radio too. Over.
Easy to Fox. That's one of the things we want to find out. Over. Oh, come on, Maggie. Out you get.
It's wild out here. I don't know why. It's only a mile or so to the nearest farm, but it feels like 100.
Yes, I know what you mean. Those stones up there, what are they? That ring of them on the summit.
The 12 Maidens, they call them in the village.
A sort of mini Stonehenge.
Something like that. Late Stone Age, Carl says, about 2000 BC.
Is there nothing that man doesn't know?
Peter, I feel cold.
Yes, it is a bit breezy up here.
No, I mean...
Hey, you all right?
Yes, I'm all right. It's not the breeze. Just a few yards back, I felt I was walking into a... belt of coldness. Oh, didn't you feel it?
No. Someone walking over your grave. Come on.
Must have been. Gone now, anyway.
We should have brought a flask of something.
Fox to Easy. Fox to Easy, are you receiving me? Over.
Easy to Fox. Yes, George. Loud and clear. What's the matter? Over.
Fox to Easy, you've disappeared off the tubes 25, 30 seconds ago. The brakes were perfectly clear, then they vanished.
Hey?
The same range, 2860. Over.
Easy to Fox. But that's daft. I can see the aerials from here. Are you sure you haven't lost us for bearing or angle? Over.
Fox to Easy. It's not that, because you disappeared off A tube too. You were quite clear up to the edge of the blacked out area, then you disappeared into it. Over.
Easy to Fox. Well, whatever it is, it doesn't affect radio, that's something. We'll keep on up to the top and call you from there, okay? Over.
Fox to Easy. Roger. Over and out.
Easy to Fox. We're right on the summit now, in the middle of the ring of tall stones, or whatever they're called. We can still see your aerials between them. Over.
Fox to Easy. They're called dolmens, for your information.
Oh.
Still no break. As far as Biodar is concerned, you might as well not be there, or any life at all. Over.
Easy to Fox. Well, apart from Maggie and me, I can see a couple of rabbits, and God knows how many birds. So, there's something very odd about this hill. Stay on watch, George, while we look around. Over.
Fox to Easy. We'll go. Over and out.
Very odd is right. Eerie, I'd have said. Oh, Peter, I don't like it.
Yeah, cheer up. Must be some explanation. We'll find it. Here, you take the Geiger counter. I can't think why it should be relevant, but we've got to try everything.
All right.
I'll try a few compass bearings. Our own aerials first.
I wish we'd brought Carl with us.
My, what could he do?
I don't know.
Huh. Am I imagining things, or is this compass erratic? I can't get a steady bearing.
Iron in the hill.
Oh, my hand's shaky. I'll try laying it down. That nice flat stone in the centre, here.
Well, the Geiger's showing nothing. Normal level.
Oh, I didn't think it would. But... Hey, look at the compass.
Seems to be weaving backwards and forwards.
Well, I'll say it's 3 or 4 degrees. Say, what's wrong with this place?
Peter, this stone, it's all stained.
Oh, don't you start. That's just normal weathering.
Well, maybe. Well, look, the turf beside it's been cut and replaced.
Hmm? So it has. Wait a minute. See if I can lift it.
Oh, God. No.
Now, why the hell should anyone want to bury a couple of dolls on top of Maiden Tor?
They're not dolls, Peter. They're wax images.
So they are. You mean some stupid village has been playing at witchcraft?
If you can call it playing. Looks dead serious to me. That one, what's it got in its heart?
Darning needle. Rusty.
Well, it must have been there several months.
And who does it look like? Thin, bald, that face.
Now you're getting me seeing things. For a second, I thought it was the spit image of Tom McKinnon.
It is, Peter. And how long ago did he die?
2 or 3 months.
Oh, no, Mackie, that's just sick. Coincidence.
All right, then. The other one. Any needles?
No. Just some iron wire around its head with a nail for a sort of tourniquet so it can be twisted tighter. Now, that's newer. It's not so rusty as a needle.
Plump. With a beard.
Phil Jessop. The professor.
Who's been having severe headaches recently.
Well, it may be somebody's sick joke, but at least we can smash up the thing.
No, Peter, no. We're going to wrap them up carefully, just as they are, and take them for Carl Ewing to look at. I have a feeling this is his province.
Maggie, love, I know it's horrible, but it's not serious. Someone with an unbalanced mind...
Not serious? Then what's protecting Maiden Tor against Bayadar? Why can't we pick up its life on our screens, not even the life in ourselves, when we come up here?
You're honestly suggesting that these and that are connected?
Peter, somebody or something on Maiden Tor is hostile to us, hostile to what we're working on. Tom McKinnon's dead, Phil Jessop, who succeeded him, is ill, and there's a ring of blindness round this place. Whoever's fighting us isn't using ordinary weapons, and I think we're going to have to fight him back on his own ground.
That was part one of The 12 Maidens by Stuart Farrar. Listen to the next episode of David H. Godfrey's production of The 12 Maidens. White against black.
That was part one of The 12 Maidens, a serial for radio in 6 parts, with Martin Jarvis as Peter Brent, Patricia Gallimore as Margaret Govan, Sean Arnold as Sergeant George Blake, Hayden Jones as Dr. Carl Ewing, Douglas Blackwell as Joe Gurney, Patrick Tull as Reuben Fairfax, the Coven leader, Eva Stewart as Bridget Williams, Fraser Kerr as Donald Williams, Anthony Higginson as Rex Andrews, Margaret Robertson as Susan Platt, Lewis Stringer as Professor Philip Jessop, and Alan Reed as Bill. And we'll have the next part of The 12 Maidens at the same time next week. And if you yourself would like to nominate a programme from the archive you'd like to hear again, do please drop us a line at radio4extra@bbc.co.uk.